Okay, so now we are reconvening our deliberations again. We're talking about best comedy 2016.
Oh boy!
Once again, we're not saying this is the absolute best comedy. This is the best bald move comedy. This is pulled from a list of the one or both of us have seen.
Uh huh.
So I guess maybe we should go through and start this as an ordered list, but also I guess maybe bold the stuff that you have seen. Because that should probably get some kind of priority, shouldn't it?
Okay. I'm going to tell
you. I can argue for things that...
The fuck?
What?
I've seen that.
Oh, you're going to italicize.
I've
all
seen
right.
part of this. Yeah, I'm bolding the final lists.
Okay.
So I saw part of that. I saw
Silicon Valley
this.
For sure.
Saw part of this. Wait. Is documentary now season 2 or season 1?
Season 2.
I haven't seen any of it.
Okay, well, shoot.
Oh, I saw this.
Didn't see that.
Yeah,
is
I don't think
it's
going to
be. Is
the
last one?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've seen Always Sunny, Ballers, Silicon
part
Valley.
Part of Ballers, part of.
Vice Principals, Vice Fuller Principals. House. Let's move those to the top of the list.
Okay. Boy, this is gonna be a real pathetic list, I have a feeling. So you want those there? Why am I not doing this on my laptop? It's
yeah,
much easier.
I don't know.
Oh, Horseman.
Horseman. Can't have a Horseman in there.
And then you want these up top.
Saying a Horseman can't win the Baldur's 2016 award.
I'm a horsist. I'm a speciesist. Sorry.
Okay, so among those, can you sort what you think is the best one? Silicon Valley better than Always Sunny from last year?
Yeah, I think so. Always Sunny was good, but not great.
It had two good to great episodes. Three, run of the mill, and then two I thought pretty bad, unentertaining.
Yeah.
Frank's Day.
Frank's Day was excellent.
Was that the one that's kind of like being John Malkovich, but uh-huh. with Frank? That
all
was pretty
POV.
Inspired. Yeah, really
it was
good.
It was real good. The gang goes to hell, I think, is what the last two are called.
About
parts
when they went
two.
On a cruise.
Those are pretty good. Always Sunny is suffering from being an 11, now 12 season show.
Mm-hmm.
I see the machinations. I see the tricks.
The creeps
in Always
and the
Sunny, right? Like, you see them in the white robes with the bright light, and you're like, oh, they're talking to God.
Yeah.
But they're not really talking to God. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, some of that stuff works to its advantage. Like, if they were actually talking to God here,
mm-hmm.
and they were essentially giving God the judge treatment, you remember how, like, they would tell the judge the story, and they would elaborate,
right.
like the Phillies, the frenetic right. thing, how they got stuck in the stadium.
Sure.
If they would do that, that would actually be, okay, this is a callback to earlier in this show, and it's pretty good. It's a thing that it does. But
well, they even did that they did another courtroom scene.
They did.
I thought that kind of, like, that was a McPoyle Ponderosa deal too, wasn't it?
And it was. The thing that I loved about that was the hands.
Yeah.
The hands, the uncle's hands, Charlie's
yeah.
uncle.
That was funny, and their callback to Charlie being an expert on bird law.
Yep.
Got a chuckle yep. out of me, but that episode, like a McPoyle episode, is not great. Yeah, so...
So those are my five, and I think they're in order there.
Okay.
But that's literally all I watched.
I mean, Silicon Valley is certainly good.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
There were some really stellar scenes this season with Ehrlich,
mm-hmm.
where he's hitting the bong and he's trying to explain something very technical or not technical, but like, this is how we're going to win or something, or like, what's happened.
Yes.
And there's just a hilarious scene where he's choking.
Right.
He's choking and trying to get it out. And
he's
like,
trying to talk and smoke at the same time. And yeah.
And he's coughing.
And he's also ludicrously high.
Right. It's amazing.
Yeah. That was pretty
there were a couple
good.
Of really inspired scenes in Silicon Valley. Was the horse fucking this season? That was last season.
I don't. I think this might have been the horse fucking one. I know it's for sure the Kumail got the Pied Piper. Wasn't this one where he got the Pied Piper letter jacket?
I think so. It's been a very long time.
Yeah,
Silicon
yeah, yeah.
Valley season 3 came out early in the year.
I thought it was entertaining, and it had yeah. the who was the Man, who's the weird boss?
Weird boss. Steven Tobolowsky.
Tobolowsky. I thought he was really good in it, and his, like, you know, machinations against the crew was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And they continue to make it kind of interesting and twist the twists and turns and kind of like the – it still feels ripped from the actual Silicon Valley. It's definitely good. But I don't know because I don't know how to discuss this categories because it's some of my favorites. Like, I think Atlanta is probably the best comedy of the year for me. And also I want to give shouts out to like Lady Dynamite, which was premiered on Netflix last year, which was an excellent look. I talk about all these things like Baskets with Zach Galifianakis as a out of work, unemployed, classically trained European clown in America.
Okay.
And there's just a lot of like really good sight gags, like Louis Anderson plays his mother in drag,
okay.
which is pretty funny. He gets everywhere by roller skates. He works as a rodeo clown. He's trying to do all this, like, crazy, you know, classic French clown shit at a radio at a rodeo show. It's just a surreal comedy, and it got a second season. Lady Dynamite was good because it's, like, a really interesting look into the mind of, like a person is dealing with mental illness and they get a taste of fame and then they start because this is all about, I guess, it's based on this real comedian's life. Her name's Maria. I can't remember her last name. But she got a gig where she was a gig as like a spokesperson for Target. And she did like the zany kind of shtick stuff for their commercials and she got paid. But what happened is that she, you know, the combination of her social anxiety and guilt and progressive sensibilities and real mental illness Maria Bamford's her name, combined to make her just have a nervous fucking breakdown over all this. Okay. And this is kind of like a fictionalized version of her life in the immediate aftermath. And it's got this really interesting structure where it goes back like to her signing this deal and the aftermath and like the old agent she had that got her to that point in her career with the new, more aggressive agent that got her into the next. And she goes through some of the people she dated. Like, she dates this one guy who's played by the surprisingly chubby Dean Cain.
Surprisingly chubby, okay.
But it's just like it got genuine laughs out of like real rough looks at mental illness, and that's got to be hard to do. And I thought it was also kind of brave of her to put all that stuff out. BoJack Horseman is this animated series. It's got Aaron Paul, where I think I've talked about this before, that he actually does a little bit of a voice. Like, he's not just like the celebrity. Like, Will Arnett is BoJack Horseman, and he's just fucking Will Arnett.
Right.
Aaron Paul's actually trying to do something, and he plays kind of like He plays a guy who's not immediately obvious why, but he's living with BoJack Horseman. He's like the Kato Kaelin. And he's always got these kind of like tertiary scams that he's trying to run. And BoJack Horseman kind of loathes him, but he also depends on him. They got this weird codependent relationship. I don't know. It's brilliant, too. And it can go like incredibly dark. Like, you'll see BoJack go to like madman Don Draper levels of bad ideas in his career and his personal relationships, but it's also like side-splittingly funny. And there's like an experimental episode where the conceit is BoJack does this press junket in a fish town, which happens to be under the sea, and he's wearing a special helmet so he can't talk to anybody. So the whole episode is done without – there's like 30 minutes with no dialogue.
Huh.
And it does some really interesting stuff. Atlanta is just Donald Glover – you know, I don't know how to talk about like Atlanta and Insecure, because they're both black comedies and they're talking about a lot of things that are like intensely part of, like, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a poor kid that grew up in Atlanta and then, you know, is getting a little bit of taste of fame being the agent for a rapper who's on the up and come and gets involved in shootouts. But there's also just like stuff that works. Like, the funniest moment in Atlanta for me was the payoff of this long, elaborate joke about a basketball, or I think a football player's car. He has apparently an invisible car. And it's the payoff of that joke is just got to be seen to be believed. And it comes out of nowhere. Hmm. And it's also got to like just break out the rapper whose name's Paperboy has got this sidekick. I can't remember his name, but he's like this stoner philosopher kind of role where he's like just, you can tell he's like very educated and smart, but he also just smokes a ton of weed and has checked out on doing anything in society. And both of them deal, both Insecure and Atlanta deal with like what it's like to be like, you know, there's obviously upper class black people, mm-hmm. and like what happens when like a lower or middle class like aspire to be in these circles and start circulating these roles and the friction in there. But it's all really super interesting and it feels real and it's great. It's got great performances and sometimes it's super funny, but I don't know how to comment on it as a white guy.
Okay.
Especially getting being an older white guy. Like a lot of those struggles of young people are increasingly far behind me.
Sure, sure.
But those are the ones, I guess. Documentary Now, you've seen season one. Season two is essentially more of the same.
Yeah, figured it would be.
So let's talk about that. That's something we can actually talk about because I think part of like what I like to do with the Baldies is for people that might have, you know, missed television that we haven't gotten to talk about, is to try to turn people on to good television. Documentary Now is something that's on. Is it on Sundance or IFC?
I couldn't tell you. I know Portlandia is on IFC.
Talk about documentary. Make the pitch for why people should be. It's on IFC. Make the pitch for why people should watch Documentary Now.
Well, I feel like if you watch a lot of television, especially like with Netflix and HBO, like all of these new networks that are springing up online, a lot of that is kind of documentary based. Like mm-hmm. they get, or at least they used to. Now they're doing a lot of originals, but like a lot of that was, oh, we've got this niche documentary that we're going to throw on here, and you can watch it. And we have 15 different documentaries on sushi, whatever topic you want. Documentary Now kind of takes a spin on each type of documentary that you've seen before and kind of spins it out to, you know, an absurdist sort of conclusion. And I feel like they really excel at it. Like there's a documentary about movie making, mm-hmm. About this guy who goes to somewhere really cold. I don't know if it's the Arctic Circle or what, but it's John Slattery, actually. He goes out there, and he's going to make a documentary about this Nanook. Is that his name? Yeah. I don't know.
He's not his real name.
No, but it's a guy. He's kind of built up this legend, right? He's crafted this documentary about this guy. Mm-hmm. But as he goes along, the guy gets a taste of fame, right? He realizes he's in a documentary.
He goes and finds the village idiot, essentially, uh-huh. in this Inuit culture. And because he's easily malleable, and all the other real Inuits are like, we don't want to pose and do a bunch of
This is bullshit.
Yeah, this isn't like our real culture, and so
we have a life to live.
Right, he finds this guy who will do like essentially lean into whatever stereotype or prejudice of what these Native Americans living in this white tundra would look like and do, and how they hunt and ride dog-powered sleds and whatnot, but he's a terrible Native American, mm-hmm. And he's a kind of like maybe has like some emotional and mental problems,
right? And then over the course of it, he gets kind of a taste for filmmaking, and
right.
he himself becomes a documentarian, and he exaggerates and kind of bloviates about his own life.
But ends up making like a superior film to what the
the Citizen Kane of documentaries here.
Right, but he starts bitching about the filmmaking, and you know, it's both a hilarious look at this kind of like white man documenting this culture, uh-huh. and also Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah,
just lampooning Hollywood and producers and divas and all that.
And that's just one of them. I mean, there's the other one, the Blue Jeans Conspiracy.
No, Blue Jean Committee.
Committee, yeah, which is, I think, the finale of season one.
Mm-hmm. It's a two-parter.
That is kind of you've all seen like these behind-the-scenes band documentaries, mm-hmm. right? Like a VH1 sort of whatever it's called, Behind the Music.
Uh-huh.
You've seen 1,000 of those. Well, it kind of lampoons those, like, it goes and it looks at this band that that was super wildly popular in the 80s or whatever, and they broke up, and they interview the stars of it about why they broke up and you know how they feel about it and everything, and they try and get a reunion going here, and it's like so spot on as far as like the making of these documentaries and what like the formula for each documentary,
right?
Except it takes it to the next level. It just goes like kind of off the rails at some point,
right? Like Bill Hader plays the member of the band who's not much of a musician, but he's the one that's like the Gene Simmons type who's like make him
marketing
famous.
And yeah, he's
and then who's the other guy? The Portlandia guy.
Cary Brownstein and Fred Armisen.
Fred Armisen plays the actually musically gifted, is about the purity of the experience and not caring about the money.
The punk rock guy.
Yeah, and they get a lot like it's funny like because the scandals the band goes through, they're from Chicago. And at some point, Bill Hader swears off of meat.
Okay.
Remember that? And that's like that just like scandalizes Chicago. And
yeah, because, you know, Italian.
They like their sausages there.
And they do. Sausage and their pizzas. I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah, it's wild.
My favorite one was the parody of the Thin Blue Line, where you have Bill Hader playing. After the fact look at these guys in prison, and Bill Hader plays the obvious guilty party to the shooting, and Fred Armisen is just the hapless patsy that takes the fall. And you can kind of see that, like, the only reason that Fred Armisen took the fall is because he's just an intensely unlikable idiot. And, like, the cops are just like, you know, like, we're kind of even not sure, but, like, I just hate this guy. And I really like Bill Hader. And, like, Bill Hader, it's kind of a send-up of, like, also Making a Murderer and what was the one with the Jinx?
Yeah,
because he accidentally confesses at the end, but it's not going to do anything different. And you're right. If you watch a lot of the modern documentaries, all of these are parodies, very specific parodies. But like Cecily had seen most of them in season one. I had seen two or three, but I still found they work. Like I didn't know what the one Nanook was based on, but it was still really, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And season two continues more of the same. You've got like a look into like two political rivals, except for it's not about the political rivals, about their campaign staff managers.
Okay.
And it's like, it's super low stakes. Like it's some kind of, I don't know, a citywide race in Minnesota, but they're running it like it's this high pressure, scandal ridden national campaign. That one was funny. There's another one where Fred Armisen plays the son of a man who runs a restaurant. And he's got this, like, it's like this world class, and they've got all these famous foodies, like, was Anton Brown? What? Help me out. You know,
Anthony Bourdain?
Anthony Bourdain's in it, but there's another one. Alton
Brown?
Alton Brown. They get interviews with all these guys.
Really? The real people?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And they're actually talking about this guy who has, I think it's chicken and rice, is what this, and he only makes chicken and rice.
Okay.
Except for they showed like how ludicrous his process for maintaining quality. For example, one of the daily rituals is this old man goes into a giant cage with a chicken. And if he can catch the chicken, then the restaurant has chicken that day. If he doesn't, they just serve rice. And like when they sell it, it's like just very exclusive. You got to go on top of this fucking Peruvian mountain to get to it. And but everyone talks about how it's such a pure, authentic experience. And he's trying to train his son to take over the family business because he's getting too old. But his son is like he's Fred Armistead. So but there's a lot of stuff like that. It just continues to be. It's amazing that you got like 20 of those solid ideas that you can execute on. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, season one was great. I didn't see season two, but.
There's another one on Encyclopedia Salesman that's kind of a little Glengarry Glenn Ross. Or no, okay. They're selling globes.
Globes?
That's what it is.
Oh,
door-to-door globe salesman.
That's a tough gig, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's really funny, too. But I don't – so I guess what I need to try to figure out is – because, like, you know, there's a lot of that I like here, but I think the ones that are really – like, I also got Harmon Quest, which was a CISO original. If you've heard Harmontown or seen the documentary – you know that a big part of their show used to be role-playing D&D with this Spencer guy as a game master. They spun that off into its own little thing, and what it is that they've got a core group of Dan Harmon, his ex-wife Erin McGathy, and his sidekick, who's the comptroller on the show, Jeff. Is it Daniels? No, it can't be Jeff Daniels. I've seen like 160 of these episodes of Harmontown, and I still can't get this guy's name right. Uh-huh. Jeff something or other. He's on Whose Line It Is Anyway. And they have a rotating fourth character who's a Hollywood celebrity. Like they had Aubrey Plaza do one, and they had the star of Silicon Valley came in. Tom Middleditch?
Yeah.
That's actually his name?
I think it's Middleditch.
How did I get his name right?
I don't know. I've got
Tommy Middledee or whatever. Yep. He comes in there, and he's probably the best one, but they just have all these, like, you know, not A-list probably stars, although Aubrey Plaza's up there, but they have all these people to get together, and they tell one cohesive story about these three central characters and how they try to just move plot. And I thought it was entertaining. But they take like, you know, an hour and a half of footage and edit it down to like 40 minutes. So it's like the 40 funniest, most cohesive points. It was pretty entertaining. But the ones I guess I want to make an argument for are Lady Dynamite, Atlanta and Insecure. And okay. I don't know how to slot these in with the ones like...
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to trust your judgment here, I guess, because I haven't seen those, so... I have no comments on it.
And that's the other thing. It's like Atlanta and Insecure, neither one of them are funnier than Silicon Valley.
Right.
But they're better shows. And that's the other problem with these is you've got these 30-minute comedies that also have a lot more important and interesting things to say.
Right.
One of the things that's amazing about Atlanta is they take a whole episode where they go away from Donald Glover's character and deal with his the mother of his child who – they kind of live together, but she's seeing other people, and she's trying to kick him out because he can't make any rent payments. But it's all about a day in her life. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that this thing just – like, and I think they also do something with Paperboy too, where they'll just take one of the side characters, promote them front and center, and they don't really even miss a beat. I feel like Atlanta needs to be the best comedy this year. And that's, I guess, the most important thing.
All right. Sure. I don't know. Like I said, I'm going to kind of defer to you on this category. I think you certainly watched a lot more comedies. What do you have to say about like Girls this year? Anything?
It was okay. There's this one really good episode with Allison Williams where her ex-boyfriend Charlie came back as a heroin addict, and they had like this, you know, just one-shot episode. It's almost like a little art movie. It wasn't particularly funny. It was just a look into these people's lives.
Was this the longer-haired guy from season one?
He didn't have long hair in season one. I don't know how to describe it. Because I know you've seen, like, the first two seasons.
Yeah, didn't he have, like, a kind of frat boy look to him?
Frat boy look? No, you're not talking about Adam Driver. You know, no. That's the one looks like he's still kicking around.
Kylo Ren.
Yeah, I don't know what long-haired guy you're talking about. Maybe he is a little bit of a frat boy.
I don't know. I think I know who you're talking about, but I'm not sure.
But they have the it's just like one night in New York City, and you know,
he's the guy who did the startup thing.
Yes, that's the
guy. Yeah, that's the guy I'm talking about. I got his look wrong.
Yeah, but you find out that he's borderline homeless and also a heroin addict now.
Great. That's
and
my
she finds that out after she has a night of sex with him, and there's like all this drama about like, I just had sex with this intravenous drug user who's been...
How'd he pass himself off as a normal human being?
Well, because he's not... You can tell that like this... He's kind of hit the skid. Like after his startup, there's like a hint that it either failed or it got bought out and he got screwed out of the deal. And then he aggressively went away from that and kind of like just pursued his own thing, and that led to him being on the street and kind of... You know, run around the corner boys. And so he's like in the early stages of this thing.
Gotcha.
Like he doesn't look like Bubbles from The Wire.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
He can still pull down Allison Williams.
Pulls up in his t-shirt card.
Yeah. But he definitely has more of an edge to him.
Uh-huh.
But that was like a really good, but the
looking
rest of
like
the season.
Looking like Rickety
Cricket. I guess I'm ready for Girls. I think this is the final season. I think it's about time.
Okay.
Because it's increasingly getting these women are too old to be pulling to stay. Like it's time for them all to shit or get off the pot. Like, okay, like
with their lives?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Like,
yeah.
this kind of period of figuring out who you want to be
that
is over?
That only can last, like, there's a limit of how much you can fuck around as an adult before it catches up to you, and you're either going to hit the skids like Charlie, or you're going to make something of yourself.
Right.
And I'm not saying, you know, they all have to sell out and do whatever, but, like, you know, you got to kind of have a serious relationship, and you have to have a serious job, and you can't just dabble in writer's workshops and whatnot, and you know,
sure.
Use your friends and your relatives, and that's it, it's already uncomfortable to watch a lot of times, but it's just increasingly like, yeah, these people need to get their shit together. So I'm definitely going to watch the last season. I'm curious to see where they go with it, but I definitely think this needs to be it. But yeah, I don't know. I think like Atlanta needs to go up the top and Insecure somewhere in the top five.
Okay, let's do that.
Because I was surprised at how little like fanfare the Insecure got. Maybe because it's too late in the season, or Atlanta stole some of its thunder. But that show is really, really, really good, and it's going to make some noise in the best actor and male and female actor categories.
Okay, we don't have this in like a normal
I know we
list
don't
here.
We don't. And again, what does it even mean? I got you know what
right. Should I? Can I? Let's try this. Does this work? Booyah.
Ballers is all this. I thought they solved a lot of the problems that season one Ballers had, and that there was not any real stakes. And I felt like there were real stakes going into the last episode this season with the, you know, The Rock had made some bad decisions and had pissed off some wrong people and maybe even let his partner down. And they made a lot of that go away. But then he's also dealing with this like pain addiction to pain pills, which he eventually has a total the final scene is him undergoing a total hip replacement from the injuries he sustained on field. But he was like eating Vicodin like fucking Smarties or Pez.
Yeah.
And I wonder if like season three also he had done, you know, the way he lost his money is he sunk a bunch of his money into a shady real estate deal investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the final few episodes, he's going around to his clients and he's raising money from them to fund his break-off talent, not talent agency. I guess it is some kind of agency, financial mm-hmm. planning agency, which is like, you know, that's the number one thing you can't do as a financial consultant. Like, that's a huge conflict of interest, is to tell your clients to invest in your own unsecured deal.
Sure.
And they also had a really hard-hitting moment where they used like Eddie George, who you don't know, but he's a running back for the Tennessee Titans. And I guess he in real life did hit the skids and lost a lot of his money. And there's a lot of articles written about that. He plays a really interesting arc at the end where you find out that Spencer goes, who's The Rock, he goes to take his you know, to try to pass his test or whatever to get his NFL player's license, agent license. Mm-hmm. And there's a complaint. And Eddie George is a player that lost money in The Rock's, you know, the same deal that ruined The Rock, except for, like, The Rock still had $1 million or $2, whatever. Like, right. Eddie George, like, he talks about, like, you know, I fucking had to go work at a grocery store. I almost committed suicide. Like, I lost everything. And there was some genuine drama with that, but then they kind of make it go away. But I'm thinking for season three, I guess I want to see him face some real consequences. I want to see him struggle. You know, now that he has this operation, what happens when the Vicodin runs out and you're still fucking addicted to painkillers?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. That was pretty good, but not in the top five good.
What happened with the Anthony Garcia stuff?
So
he's
he was battling. So
him.
Anthony Garcia it's interesting because Anthony Garcia did to Spencer what Spencer's doing to his clients. Like Anthony mm-hmm. Garcia, like you find out in the end of the season that he advised Spencer to make a small investment into this thing that he thought would make a lot of money. Spencer decided to put like 10 times more money into it than he suggested. So Spencer blames him for losing all of his money, but he says no. You did it to yourself, and I tried to save you, and you were too stubborn to listen. And who, you know, it's kind of like, which one do you believe? But then you see Spencer making the same mistake that he did, and you're like, probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, I know. At the point I stopped watching, or you know, just fell off of it. They were kind of at each other's throats. They were trying to, they were fighting over the same client, and and they were both wanting to take each other down. I don't know what.
Well, so Spence, so the old guy who owns like the big yacht, and he's the one that's behind
the head of the agency they were working at.
He essentially lets, he essentially tells Spencer he's going to hire him back, and I don't know. They all make up, like all the Rod Corddry and Rob Corddry and The Rock and this old guy that owns the boat all kind of make nice. That's what I thought. Like my big criticism for season one is they set some real stakes, and then like at the end it's all like The Rock's big smile and some Lil Wayne rapping comes in, and then everything's just all better.
Right.
Like there's no real serious, and they raise a lot of other issues, like the big guy who's the offensive tackle who retired and came out of retirement and retired again. He took a job at the Dolphins, and that's causing friction of his marriage, because they make a good point, like all these guys that work like as coaches and personnel on football teams, they just don't have any lives. They work like 70, 80 hours around the, like it never ends. Like during the football season, you got football season, then you got scouting and drafting, and then you got some, like it just never ends. It's a job that never ends, and they're super intense, and it causes a lot of them to lose their family. So there's stakes there because this guy's got a new baby and a wife he loves. And
right.
But I don't know how engaged to get, because it's just at the end of the day, it's a comedy and it's about The Rock being awesome, and they always pull their punches at the last minute.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like that show was particularly funny. Like, it's fun to watch, but it's not really,
did you make it
like,
to the thing
funny.
Where I forget who the big defensive lineman is, but he's got an idiot friend where he goes to buy an exotic pet for him. You didn't see that? And he ends up with, like, I think it was a llama.
No, I didn't.
And him losing that and chasing, yeah, that, or maybe it's like a panther or something. I don't remember, but there's an exotic pet plot that was pretty laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
All right, so what are we going to do with this category?
And there's Vice Principals, which
Vice Principals.
I saw the first few episodes of and thought it was weird. It was like, I guess you can call it a comedy. It had moments which were absolutely hilarious, but it also had a lot more moments that were like uncomfortable or a little maybe too intense or real or like something.
Yeah, no, like you got like, you know, you Danny McBride and one is Walton Goggins rather burned down this black single mom,
the new
principal's house just because, and she seems like she's a really good principal too.
Uh-huh.
And these guys are clown jobs.
Yeah.
And like, they also kind of make it seem like it's a hate crime. Or at least that's the impression I got.
Yeah. I mean,
it kind of is a hate crime. They hate her and they burn her house down.
Right. Maybe not for all the usual reasons, but it is.
And I'm thinking, like, oh my God. Like, I don't know. Like, I had a real problem with that in the early goings of Always Sunny, where the gang would do just terrible things to normal people, and I find myself empathizing with the people. They're like a tornado, you know?
Right.
Like, this woman's getting, like, this could easily be a disaster about a tornado hitting this poor woman, and I just feel so bad for her, but I'm supposed to, I'm not exactly rooting for Danny McBride, plus he's not a hero. He's terrible to his daughter, he's terrible to his ex-wife, and I forget who Eli Thompson, what's his name, like Wiggins, that can't be right.
Yeah, Shea Wiggins.
But he's actually trying to be a really good stepdad to his daughter and trying to be cool to Dan, and he just won't have it.
Yeah.
And that shit just, man, it's really uncomfortable for me to watch. It's like watching a guy who fails at American Idol over and over and over again, and like at the end of the episode, Simon Cowell's there to tell him what an idiot he is.
And burn down his house.
And burn down his house, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it did have its moments where, you know, some of the funniest stuff I'd seen out of all of these shows, but they were just flashes, and then they were gone, and it didn't feel like I was laughing enough.
And I don't know where these comedies, because it seems like, you know, like Always Sunny was essentially a ruder, cruder, meaner version of Seinfeld.
Okay. Yeah.
And now this is kind of like a ruder, cruder, meaner version of Always Sunny. And like, where are these dark comedies going to end up at? And am I going to get off on the ride before they do? Because much, much darker than this. And I just don't know if I can make it through.
Right.
is not bad, and Walton Goggins is kind of amazing in this. I don't know where his sexuality is. He's got this weird situation where he's living with this Asian woman who's got this really domineering, stereotypical Asian stepmom and or mother-in-law that lives with him.
Spits in her tea or...
No, that's what he does with the... Oh, that's like... See, that's a perfect moment. Like, he spits in the principal's coffee or tea and she catches him doing it. And like my head feels like it's on fire when I see a scene like that. It's so uncomfortable to watch.
Right. I mean, is it so uncomfortable you just have to laugh? Because I feel like it is.
I mean, you're supposed to, but I don't have that reflex. I just want to cover my eyes and go like, oh God, no! First of all, why would you do that? And now you're caught. And now what are you going to do? Going to try to act like it's not happening?
Yeah, I mean that's the stuff that I laugh at, but. Sure.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, people do, obviously. I'm just wired differently. So I don't know what... I mean, I definitely want to talk about it, but I don't think it's on the top five.
Yeah, probably not. And then Fuller House, obviously, that's not going to make this list. But, you know, it's a comedy that I watched this year. And I actually kind of liked the first episode. I thought the episode where they brought everybody except for the people who are too famous to come back, the Olsen twins... too rich to come back, should I say?
Oh, well, they might actually be just too weird and broken to come back. Like, has anyone seen them in public in the last 5 years?
I certainly haven't.
I just feel like they're living together in some Hollywood gothic, like they're living in the old Munsters mansion.
Yeah.
And they're just going to get weird together.
Maybe so. But I actually thought that first episode was kind of good.
Huh.
And then, you know, all of the main players that you like from Full House kind of go away. DJ sticks around, Stephanie sticks around, and Kimmy stick around, and they all take over the Tanner house. Her dad, I don't know, flies off to Barbados or some shit. And they take over, and it's like, I guess DJ's ex-boyfriend is kind of around. And she meets a guy. She's working as like a pet doctor, an animal doctor, a vet. Mm-hmm. And there's another guy who she's kind of got it for. And then Kimmy Gibbler's husband is in the picture, or ex-husband, who is now a thing again. I don't know. It gets real weird. And it becomes more about like DJ and Stephanie and Kimmy and their offspring.
Hmm.
So well, they become the new Danny and you know, Joey and Jesse.
Right.
So...
I don't know. Like, when you say it's good, like, define good. Like, it's just, like, mindlessly fun to watch or nostalgic, or is it actually have
that first
something...
episode? Yeah, it's...
So you've only seen the first episode?
No, I saw the whole first season. Oh. But the first episode is really the only good thing about it.
Oh, really? So it just goes in forgettable TV territory.
Yeah.
Because I was, like, hoping for a little bit of, like, a subversion.
They hardly subvert it at all. Really? They occasionally throw a jab... Uh-huh. But there's not enough there to make me say, okay, this is really a subversion of the old sitcom trope.
I mean, it goes right down to the laugh track. But like Netflix, I guess I was hoping for something a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it's really not. You know, it's strange.
Huh.
It is a show out of time, most certainly.
Yeah. So to bring us back around to the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we got Atlanta, Silicon Valley, Always Sunny, Insecure, Ballers. Ballers needs to get the fuck out of here.
Okay.
Like maybe we can put Lady Dynamite on under Insecure. That show is really fucking funny.
Okay.
I wish I could get BoJack up. Are we doing a top five or top 10?
Well, there's 16. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I can tell you for a fact that it's funnier than Full House.
It's definitely funnier than Ballers. I just don't know if it should go higher than that. Let's put it underneath Lady Dynamite.
Okay.
What if I should say something about Orange is the New Black? Because it had... I mean, I've heard people are all over the map with it. Because it's good and it went really dark, but also it's got this preposterously anti... Like, one of the big plots is the prison has gone privatized. So there's a lot of shots at privatized prison, which I'm all on board for.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have this plot where to save money, instead of hiring professional guards, they get ex-military, like, you know, Iraqi war vets. And every one of these military people are a fucking nightmare. Mm-hmm. They're just terrible, terrible people. Like, not even about the PTSD of it. They're just garbage people. They do terrible things, and they oppress the inmates, and they abuse them. And it's like, I've seen from a lot of vets, and even I was when I was watching them, like, I just can't believe that you can take this unnuanced shot at such a, you know, a huge segment of society, like a pretty unfair and unwarranted shot. And like, even before, like, they've that's kind of Jinji Cohen's thing, is that she makes you hate a character and then makes you feel bad for them and then shows, like, but there's like no redeeming thing about these characters. And I don't know, that was a pretty big flaw of that season. And also there's another show that, like, I've heard that it's like got two more seasons into it, but I don't know how many more seasons I want to be on it, so it's not really on my top 10 list.
Okay.
So like I said, are we going to do top 10 or top 5? Because if we're going to do top 10, I'll sweat about this a little bit more. If we're going to do top 5, then I think we're about there.
We're there? Okay.
Not
5?
I don't know that Always Sunny is funnier than BoJack Horseman. And the other, full disclosure, I watch all 3 seasons of BoJack Horseman. Hold on a second. I watch all three seasons of BoJack Horseman, like, kind of in order, like, within a month or two. So they're all, I have a hard time remembering, like, what was the high points of this season. So, like, all of them seems like it's, like, I got 3 seasons worth of highlights in my head. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like we should just go top 5, and then I think I'm fine.
That's five. That's fine.
All right. This is the category I feel the worst about, because it's kind of like I'm just flying solo here, and I'm interested in seeing what the people have to say.
Yeah, I wish I had more to contribute on that. I don't kind of watch a lot of comedies. Enough of my year is taken up by drama that a lot of comedies slip under my radar.
Well, so that's kind of like when we don't have Jack, we usually, like, Cecily and I sit down and have dinner at the table when we have Jack over. When he's not around, we usually eat in front of television. And what we usually, our go-to is comedies, because it's 30 minutes, is about as long as it takes to eat. Mm-hmm. So that's how we end up watching a ton of comedies. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what the future of best comedy is, because I don't feel like this is a particularly interesting category in the award show. And it's also we don't cover it professionally. Like, we don't do any comedy.
It's all extraneous to Bald Move.
Now, what do you think about perhaps doing, as we've talked about, doing like a Louie or something like that? What would you say to doing an Atlanta podcast?
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so
I'd be curious to see what you think about it, because it is one of those where it's a thinker as much as it is funny, maybe more so.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's the other thing. It's like, I don't know. You know, I've been watching The Wire again, and like, I'm halfway through season 3 now, and I'm surprised at how funny The Wire is. Like, I don't understand. With these comedies, like, I don't know that Atlanta is even properly classified as a comedy. It's 30 minutes long.
Right.
But shit, it's a prestige comedy. It's like a totally different thing than Always Sunny or Silicon Valley. So I don't know. I feel like these things need to go into the drama category, because there's not a lot of material difference from like the way The Wire is structured and the way Atlanta is structured.
Right.
So,
well, you know, take best comedy with a spoonful of
sugar.
Sugar.
Can't salt. Comedy's not salty.
Because, you know, comedy is a dubious thing for Bald Move.
Yeah, we don't think comedies make great podcasts, and then when you have, like, you know, I'm hoping that we get Bald Move TV going, and some of that, we can get some conversations, send me side conversations going on here, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the future of best comedy might be in doubt. I don't think we had one for the first Baldies. We did one last year because we had watched a bunch of comedies, and this might be the last year for it. We'll have to see.
Yep, we also had a best documentary last year. Who knows if we'll have one of those.
Probably not going to have one this year, because that's kind of hit and miss too. Maybe that's what it is. Like, you just, you know, some categories, like, you know, best television and best actor, there's always going to be around. But some of these subcategories, they're going to, you know, come and go.
Yeah, we'll have to see.